Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
I'd like to welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
For those who care to join us, let's have a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present, please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we are discussing steps 8 and 9, part 2. And please help me welcome the panel. We have Jonathan and Amy. I will read a paragraph, and then the panel will each share a moment or two on that, and that's how it's going to go tonight. So, what are steps 8 and 9? Step 8 is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And step 9 is made direct amends to such people whenever, you know, direct amends to those people without hurting them in some way. I could read it, but. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. If I'd have done it, I could remember. Page 80. The chances are we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we're mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Jonathan?
My name is Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic.
Jonathan.
I am sober today, thanks to a sponsor and taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Same guy who took me through the steps sponsored me today, and he knows that I am his sponsee. I also have the privilege of sponsoring another young man in the program. I have a home group. It's the Candlelight Group on Friday night. And I am definitely an alcoholic. Very quickly will identify myself as a person who cannot control his drinking, even when he tries to, and it finds it impossible to stay sober for lengths of time without some type of spiritual solution in my life. I was not a person who got in a whole lot of trouble when drinking. I did get a DUI, got a little bit of trouble with the Navy, but I'm still in the Navy, so obviously I didn't do anything that bad. And what my problem was something we like to call untreated alcoholism, which is what happened to me when I'm sober, which is crazy, crazy town up in my brain. I just real quick will tell you that the worst things that I've ever done are a result of me being sober and not realizing that I was an alcoholic and I needed to put something inside of me to feel better about myself. And the chasing of those things and the lying and the manipulation and all the other things that I have done, which we are about to get into some of those things, were the things that really plagued me. My drinking career was plagued, when I was actually drunk, was just plagued with me being unable to keep my hands to myself, my mouth shut, or my pants on at a pivotal moment in time. That's really what my drinking looked like. It wasn't spectacular. Concerning domestic problems, I had a weird entrance into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was about to get married when I took the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I had a fiance, and we were going to go off into happily ever after and stay married and have kids and, you know, do the 2.5 kids and the white picket fence. So there was a couple things that happened as a result of me, you know, when we were dating and things of that nature that we'll get into. But most of my experience with domestic problems was more of a 10th step conversation than it is a 9th step conversation. The one piece of advice that I can give you is that if you are an individual like me who took the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and then immediately went to their wedding, the worst, absolute worst time to make an amends to your wife is on your new wife, is on your honeymoon, on Valentine's Day, at the Valentine's Day dinner. It is the absolute worst possible time you could ever make amends to your wife. You can only imagine what happened. Yes, I did that, if any of you are not catching the sarcasm there. I did not call my sponsor beforehand, and he laughed at me when I told him what I did. He laughed for a long time. He laughed for about 2 minutes, and then when I started talking, he started laughing again. It did not go well, and needless to say, I had to remake amends. So I'm going to pass this particular portion of the book on to someone who hopefully knows a little bit more about how to do it successfully and has experience with that than I do. Thanks for letting me share.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy.
Hey, Amy.
My sobriety date is May 9th, 1994. My home group is this group, Simple Actions. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. And I was really hoping that you were going to have something juicy for this, because I have not ever physically cheated on anyone. but that really is not the beginning and the end of domestic problems. I had a partner for 15 years, and he got sick. He got really sick, and he was dying. And I had a best friend who was a male, and I turned to my best friend, and for the last few years of my relationship, as my partner was dying, I shared everything with that friend. And I really did not, at the time, I just thought, I can't help myself. I don't know a whole lot about love. What I know about love, I know from the relationships that I've had in these rooms. And romantic, sexual love is a whole nother world of crazy and intensity. But I could not stop myself from withdrawing from my partner. I consciously would think to myself, he's dying. He needs me. And I found myself detaching. It was almost subconscious. I was afraid of the pain that was coming my way. And I wasn't always aware of what I was doing, but there were times when I was aware that I spent less time with him or less time in the hospital room because I was already fearful of what my new life without him was going to be. And I was already fearful of how it was going to feel for him to die, as if I had any control over those things. And I didn't. He dropped dead in the living room, and I couldn't save him. I couldn't change the circumstances. But we did have several conversations, he and I, about why I spent so much time with my best friend. And I didn't think of my best friend as, you know, below the belt stuff. To me, he was just my friend. But I shared our intimate life with him. He was the person that I told everything to. And I'm telling you this because I just did a cycle of the steps. And what came up for me in inventory and then in the eighth and ninth step was that I had not lived out my sex ideal. My sex ideal not being the wish list of things in a partner, but rather the list of behaviors that were a sane and sound ideal for the future that I was willing for the God of my understanding to grow me towards. And one of those things was to trust and be trustworthy. And I told myself a lot over those few years that I'm not cheating. I am not doing anything physically that is wrong or adulterous in any way. And that should have been a clue to me that I had to keep saying that to myself. That should have been a clue to me that I was actually feeling guilty because I was 100% intimate with the other person. And so I got to a ninth step with this situation, and both of those men are now dead. So there was really nowhere to go except to write a letter to them. And so I wrote letters to these two men, telling them what I had done, telling them that I today saw a way that I could do better, that I understood that intimacy is so much more than what goes on between the sheets, and that sharing private details that are not physical, but just about feelings and fears and hopes, that it was a betrayal of sorts, and that I wanted comfort. I was not able to live out that 11th step prayer. When I should have been comforting, I was seeking comfort for myself. And because there was nowhere to go with these two letters to these two dead men that I loved, I read these letters to my sponsor and to a person, a recovering woman who I trust absolutely. And what happened for me was because I was willing, and that's a big part of step eight for me, is getting to a place of willingness. My experience with the steps is that when I really do the step prior to the next step, going to the next step is kind of just a little eh. It's not some big leap. It's not some big, frightening, horrible thing like, oh my God, I've got to go make amends. Because what's happened to me in step one through eight is that I have become convinced, I'm convicted, that an amendment has to be made to my constitution. If I am to live and be at peace, if I am to have serenity around my behavior, if what I think and what I feel adds up to how I actually behave, you know, if I have that thing that people call character is what you do when no one is looking. If all that stuff is in place for me, getting to a ninth step is just kind of, I don't want to say it's an afterthought, but all the work has been done inside of me. I'm just kind of saying the words. And that happened to me. And it was like they were in the room. And I had an experience where I knew that God was going to take my willingness, just my willingness to admit that I'm flawed. I'm flawed. And even, and I don't want to say that my best thinking got me here. I really hate that little saying, but because I have great thinking. But even on my best day, doing my best, on my knees, begging God to help me, I still fail. And I failed this man who was so good. Truly the only reason that I managed to make it 15 years in a relationship is because he was a saint, not because of me at all. So doing this, being able to do this amends, and there was another person involved in this, and that was a person that fell into the niche of going to them would injure that person or others. And so that person I had to write a letter to as well. And there's really something beautiful in taking responsibility. There is a wonderful, it's Easter, so I have all these Eastery words in my head, but I'm not going to use those. It is a cleansing kind of rebirth sort of thing to be able to admit that I've made mistakes, because that relieves me of the overwhelming feeling that I am a mistake. This is a way for me not to walk around thinking I'm a piece of dirt. This is a way for me to walk around saying I've done some icky stuff and God is working with me and I'm willing to be changed in these areas. And my experience has been that the longer I stay sober, the longer I practice these principles in all my affairs, the more the sunlight of the Spirit shines, beams on the things about me that are icky. And I am less willing to hold on to them. That's all I have to say about that.
Amazing. Page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" John?
My name is Jonathan. I'm an alcoholic. And hopefully one day I can have the wherewithal to take inventory and find out that, because all of my crap that happened was definitely below the belt stuff with my ex-wife. It was a lot of me dumping her before we were married just so I can sleep with somebody else and then get back together with her because it was convenient. And I tried to formulate this during our amends, and she's a very blunt individual, and she's like, "Did you cheat on me? Did you cheat on me?" And I started like, "Well, what is the definition of what is cheating really?" And then, it needless to say, it didn't go well. So I was like, "Well, I'm sober now." So here I am, farmer emerging from the storm cellar, and things are gonna be better because I'm not gonna do that to you. I'm going to remain faithful, and I'm going to try to be a husband and try to be a father. I can tell you one of the first incidences of the farmer emerging from the storm cellar that I ran into was in about 6 months of sobriety, where I had to make an amends to my wife, a 10-step amends technically, and she was very upset that I was going to 5, sometimes 6 AA meetings a week. So I'm in the Navy. I work until about 16:30, 17:30 every day. For you civilians, that's 4:30, 5:30. And I would come home, I would eat whatever food that she cooked, and then it'd be like, all right, peace out, I'm going to go to a meeting. And I was very confused as to why Sundays were just not enough for her. As in that, you know, I'm sober now. I have to go to 5 or 6 AA meetings a week, and I call my sponsor, and I'm like, she doesn't get it. She doesn't understand that I'm sober, and I have to help all of these drunks. And my sponsor said, no, you really don't. A more important demonstration of these principles lies in your relative homes and family affairs and occupations. Some of us are lucky enough to give all of our time to this work, but everyone else considers this thing an avocation. And I had to look that word up because my sponsor likes to make me look words up. And an avocation is something that somebody does on the side, like a volunteer type thing. And he's like, why don't you try 3 AA meetings a week, sometimes 2, depending on how your home life is going. And instead of just going to AA meetings and sitting in a chair and then sharing and, you know, leaving, finding a sponsee to work with. And trust me, the sponsee will take up plenty of your time, and you will be able to lead a spiritual life that way. So I had to start making amends like that to my wife, and spend more time at home instead of, you know, hiding away. And I, you know, nobody ever called me up and asked me how to run AA. Bill or Bob never, you know, shot me an email or text message. This is just my experience. So if your experience is that 5 to 6 meetings work for you and you're married, please don't come up and yell at me after the meeting. This is just my experience. And I can tell you that that marriage, which has ended, with kind of along the same lines she was talking about, my ex is a fantastic mother, and we tried the best that we could. Taught me a hell of a lot about continuing to admit where I was wrong and being willing to make amends to somebody, going right back to the A step, especially somebody who I'm angry at. Like, she went from the most amazing person in the world to the man we hated, that it talks about, man or woman that we hated, that it talks about. And from very quickly, it would, in the course of a conversation, suddenly I have this deep, burning, seething resentment against my wife for something that she had done. Which usually later turned out, always invariably turned out to be something that I had done, which placed me in a position to once again make amends for some dumb shit that I had done stuff. Sorry. I can also tell you that the whole life after I took the steps, both of my parents actually died for reasons concerning this disease. And I too also had to write letters to them. To make amends to them, and I read them to my wife, and I actually threw them in the ocean. I don't know why. Maybe it was some grandiose gesture. No idea why I did that, but I did it. We were once again on my honeymoon when I did this, and it was funny because I thought I was getting off easy because they were both dead, It turns out that having daughters and sons is like, now that I have a son and a daughter, those amends are rearing up to bite me in the ass again that I had to make to my parents, because I was a terrible child. I was selfish, inconsiderate. I did not grow up in the school of hard knocks. I grew up in the spoiled ass rich white kid with, you know, millionaire parents who just was not content with anything and was constantly selfish and self-centered. And needless to say, the notes that I wrote to them were very long and detailed about all the terrible things that happened and the things that I did to them. And it was a very funny process, because when we were talking about the 8th and 9th step amends, and we went back to the 5th step, which is where all the amends come from, I had all of this stuff that affected me at the top of my 5th step. Like all of this, you know, the perverted stuff and the things that I stayed up late at night thinking about that affected me and I felt really bad about, and made me feel bad about myself. And my sponsor said the complete psychic change, which enabled me to be conscious enough to start thinking of others and who I should be making amends to and how I should be making amends, and hopefully get to the day that Amy's at one point, look at the way that I treated my mother and my father for so many years. Look, because they were barely on my 4th and 5th step. They're like, he's like, I can't believe that you put this crap up at the top of your list, and you have failed to talk about the terrible shit that you put those two people who just loved you unconditionally through for years and years and years. And that has been a continual process for me, is trying to figure out how to be a good dad and live up to the amends that I promised my parents that I was going to make when I didn't have any kids, and I would be happy go free and throwing notes into the ocean on my honeymoon for making amends. And they are now, in the way that God and the higher power always has, rearing up to bite me in the ass with children that I have. And with my ex who lives in Florida with them, and so I have to make time to go down and see them, which has been difficult. I have to learn how to be a parent, and instead of like focusing on all the flaws that I think that my ex has, which are vast, I could write an entire novel about them, and 95% of them are probably those fancy resentments that we like to talk about sometimes. And completely push all of that crap to the side that's been built up over the almost decade that I've known this woman, and just say, what did your mother say? And just about every single thing that my child asked me, instead of inserting my own opinion, which is what I like to do because I think I know everything. And that has been a very interesting process. And that all stemmed from letters that I had to write for an amends, which I thought I was just going to throw in the ocean and never see again, and here they are rearing their ugly head. Or a beautiful head, I should say, because it really has been a beautiful process. I may have made it sound kind of negative, but I'll say one more thing and I'll pass on to Amy. Please excuse me if I start talking too long. I'm not, without getting into details, I've probably had the worst week I have ever had. Like, top three, definitely, this week of awful, terrible shit that can happen to an individual human being. There's people that know me that are nodding their heads now. What I can tell you is that I've also had the honor and the privilege to take three men through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in the past 3 weeks, and I do not believe that is an accident. And I believe entirely that that is a result of me taking the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, making the amends that I was supposed to make, and then when I screwed it up, which I often did, going back and remaking amends. And I don't believe that makes me an awesome person because I took three steps. I think God set those people in my life to help get me through these times. And I would not be able to do that if I hadn't done these things properly. So with that, I think I'll pass on.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's kind of hard to talk about step 8 and 9 without going back a little bit to step 4 and 5 and getting a look at those self-centered fears that are under my resentments. Because it's my fear that kind of has me out in the world taking people hostage, afraid that you'll take something from me that I think I need to have in order to be okay, or that you'll stand in the way of me getting what I think I need to have in order to be okay. And that's how I end up in a position where I have to make amends to people. I definitely can still be the tornado roaring my way through. I'd like to say that when I act out, I just kind of mouth off and immediately say, oh, I'm so sorry, I lost my head. But that's not what I do. I yell and stomp my feet, and people cry. And that doesn't feel good. There might have been a time when that did feel good. I was kind of proud of my ability to have people scurrying away in tears, but that doesn't feel good anymore. And how that comes up for me in step 9 is that when I'm not getting what I think I need in order to be okay, I put the pressure on you to make sure that I get what I need, because I think that it's your fault that I don't feel secure. It's your fault that I don't have what I think I need. You should be helping me get what I need. In fact, you should be able to read my mind and know what I need in order to be okay. And so I push and I bully, or I become ever more gracious or demanding, as the case may be. I switch strategies to try to get my way. I am manipulative. And I really see this a lot in the workplace. I am the manager of a place, and I am the world's worst manager. I mean, I am absolutely the perfect example of my life is unmanageable as managed by me, because I suck at it. And how I know how to manage. In my head, managing is you just boss people around. You just and really, you boss them around in such a way that they do all the crap you don't want to do. And that's not what it is at all. It turns out that being a good manager is being a good servant. And it turns out that the way I make amends on a daily basis in my place of business is that I'm willing to be a teacher And I am not a teacher. I think everyone should be as smart as I am. If you can't just look at it and figure it out, that's your problem. You got a problem. I don't have that problem. I don't even know how to teach you how to do it because I just know the answer. I know all the answers. And so I find myself teaching people how to send emails or how to talk to a customer. And, you know, along with me not being a great manager, I'm not the most patient or tolerant person either. And I'm a real freedom lover. I like to be able to express myself in any way that I see fit at any moment. And again, people end up crying. In fact, when they leave the room, there's kind of smoke in the air. Things get a little shimmery because I have just unloaded in this intense way. It has gotten better as time has gone on. I am 51 years old. And I have the first job, real job, that I've ever had in my entire life. I'm sure that I've even sat up here on this table before and admitted that I'm unemployable because I just don't recognize any authority but my own. And I really don't care what anybody else thinks. I just mainly care about what I think. And so I have a job, and I was surrounded by 12 people. I've now fired everyone, and there's really almost no one left. But and that was my other strategy, that if nobody else can do it, I'll just do it all myself. I'm going to do every job, everybody's job. And that hasn't worked out either. And what I discover by showing up in front of the God of my understanding each morning and turning my will and my life over is that I have a lot to learn. And interestingly, the people that I think that I'm teaching are actually teaching me. And I am becoming, and almost against my own will, really, because I don't want to be loving, I don't want to be gentle, I don't want to be warm and fuzzy. Warm and fuzzy people get mowed down. That's not really what I want for myself. But I am becoming a more loving, and I'm going to go in tomorrow, I'm sure, and just beat somebody down really bad because I'm saying this. It's like I'm going to jinx myself. But I am becoming a more loving and gentle and understanding person because I'm willing to relate to the world from this amends stance. From the stance that I do not know what I'm doing all the time, I screw up, and then it's my job to clean it up, and then it's my job to stand before God and say, do something with me. Please, please have your way with me. That's usually after I've had my way, and it's failed, and smoke in the air, somebody crying, blah, blah, blah. But this is a way to live. It is a way to live, to understand that on my best day, I am going to fail. Even with the people that I love the most, I am going to disappoint them. And I'm not going to be able to run, because that's what I used to do. I used to just run. You know, if I showed my tail, I didn't want you to ever see me again, because now you've seen the soft underbelly of me. You've seen the failing and the flaw in me, and I don't want to lay eyes on you again. Because I play the role that I've given myself, which is to be, you know, big and bad. And when you find out that I'm not, I want to get the heck away from you. But when you have a job, you just cannot bail out every single day. And I don't like to admit that I am flawed. I don't like to be imperfect, but I'm learning that as I show up and amend, not apologize, not say I'm sorry, because everybody's heard me say I'm sorry a million times. It's meaningless to really make an amends. I was wrong. What can I do to make this right? How can I set right what I put wrong? It's not a matter of I'm sorry. It's a matter of I'm willing. I'm willing, and I'm willing to hear what you have to tell me. That's the hardest part of the whole shebang for me, is to then say to someone, and of course it's usually someone that I think is an idiot, because when I'm like this, I think everyone is an idiot, to say to them, is there anything else about this that you need to tell me? God, talk about leaving yourself wide open. It sucks, but it's the greatest at the same time. Because that's the place where I really get to grow. And sometimes I get really surprised. I'm usually not surprised because I know what I am. But there are times when I hear things that are legitimately things that have been in the blind spot of my ego. I can't see it until somebody tells me. And then as soon as I'm told, something clicks into space and into place, and I'm invited. I feel the invitation from my higher power to surrender at a deeper level. It just keeps getting deeper and deeper. I know that I do not know. And in that position, really good things can happen for me. That's all.
We're going to continue on page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
John? God, I wish people would just judge me based on my intentions instead of my actions. That would be fun. That would be fantastic. If I offend anybody, I have to preface, I'm in the Navy, and it's not a great excuse, but I'm sticking with it. So I use the F word as like a noun, adverb, adjective, dangling participle, gerund modifier, often in just about every sentence that I construct when I'm not consciously trying to stop myself from cursing. So I apologize for that in advance.
So you're sorry.
But not going to amend your behavior.
I'm quite sorry. This is me trying to amend my behavior. Anybody who knows me knows this is clean mouth me, and that the occasion, like actual me, is a series of F bombs. It's not good. Leaves the room hazy, much like you were talking about. And that was just absolutely fantastic what you were sharing. I was at work today in front of this horrid Navy program called 3M. And I have been placed in the position as the leading petty officer of my department. And what happened to the person in front of me is they went smoke bomb and left nothing in the way of a turnover for me. So I'm having to go all over the place, and we have to live the spiritual life, because with all the other crap that's piled on top of this blind turnover that I just received as like the leading dude and like the leading manager in my division, I have like my first instinct is to be like, figure it out yourself. I'm not teaching you this crap, and I'm not learning it because I don't want to learn it. Does any of you guys know what 3M is? There's like five different programs that it takes to do said action in this thing, and I know nothing about it. I know absolutely nothing about it. But I have to be a friggin' manager now, and I have to sit down and learn this crap with the people that I'm about to task with doing the same job. I don't want to do that crap. I just want people to do the crap that I don't want to do. I thought that's what I was supposed to do as a lady petty officer. I just make you go do the stuff that I don't want to do, and I get all the cool accolades and evals for it, right? Like, that's what I want to do. But I can't freaking do that. And the problem with that is I build this little, we all have this little skull-sized castle inside of our head that we build for ourselves. And if I get trapped up in there, it's a really, really dangerous place. And the way that I get trapped up there is by is by isolating myself, becoming dangerously antisocial like we were just talking about beforehand. And how that happens is by exactly what we were talking about is I'm not doing this. You figure that crap out on your own. And if you screw it up, it's your ass that's going to be in trouble, and then slamming the door and just pushing people out of my life like that. I am highly capable of doing that. That is what I have done most of my life. I will screw things up on purpose. So if I'm in a position where I can't yell or get my way or physically force you to do the things that I want you to do, I will screw it up on purpose so I don't have to do it again. And you will never ask me to do it again. Or I will find a way to manipulate other people around me to get me what it is that I want. Or I will try all, by hook or by crook, I will find various ways. And I think I'm so good at it. I think I'm fantastic at it for some reason. Everyone around me knows I'm a schmuck. They can't stand me. Every time I walk into a room, nobody wants to talk to me. People are constantly asking me to lose their phone number and never speak to them again. And I just think I have this entirely different world going on up inside of my head. And it's an entirely result of me running the show myself. And it would just be so fantastic if people would base me off of my intentions rather than my actions, because I don't wake up that way. I don't wake up wanting to be this type of person. That was me stopping from cursing right there. I'm amending. I'm trying to amend. Every time I stutter, that's what that is. That is a pregnant F-bomb that didn't happen. pregnant pause for an F-bomb that didn't happen. Pardon me.
We keeping score now?
Yeah, we should. I think that'd be fantastic. It might help. I use people. That's what I do. That is my base mode of operations. And if you're wondering how this has anything to do with your drinking, pages 62 and 64 can help you realize what this has to do with your drinking. And if you're chronically alcoholic like I am and like everybody else in this room, once you start reading those pages, you will relate. And what I can tell you is that in the past week, I have experienced like the dregs of humanity and what happens when people get trapped up in their little skull-sized castles inside of their head and can't get out. And I can tell you that the only thing that has ever worked for me in that regards is considering you instead of myself and doing things for you that are physically painful to me because I'm sensitive and it's inconvenient and I don't want to do it because it gets in the way of the crap that I want to do. And if I am unwilling or unable to do that, I'm probably not going to get this thing. I'm going to be one of those constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself type people. It doesn't say other people, it says constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself, because in the last analysis, when I'm sitting at home staring at the ceiling fan at 2 o'clock in the morning, wondering, just contemplating the condition of my immortal soul and wondering about all the terrible things that are going to happen to me in the future, the only thing that's ever saved me from that and also saved me from a drink simultaneously, because that's the only thing that's ever shut that up, is this spiritual life thing that it's talking about right here. It tells us that we have, in the book later on, it tells us we have a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition. And I have received that only as a result of considering others over myself. An other-centric life is the only thing that's saving me from my own head currently. I think that's all I got. Thanks.
I really hate that there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. I want to just show up, admit that I'm wrong, and be fixed. You know? Like, I was the kid that when my parents would say, do you want to be spanked or do you want to go on restriction? I wanted to be spanked. And not for the reason that you may be thinking, but I just wanted to take the punishment and be done. I didn't want to go on restriction because that would last a couple of weeks. So long period of reconstruction sounds like a trudge to me. And so what it means on a daily basis for me is that if my mother says she'd like to hear from me every day, I make the phone call, even though, frankly, my mother is the last person I want to talk to on a daily basis. If my boss asks me to show somebody how to do something and it is the last thing I want to do, I do it. long period of reconstruction means one day at a time, I'm willing to do the next right thing. That doesn't mean I always do the next right thing. There are plenty of times where I gleefully do the next wrong thing and figure if I'll pay for it later, the consequences will hit me, oh well. But that's a part of the long period of reconstruction ahead as well, because I do it my way, it doesn't work out, I'm in pain, and then I'm back down on my knees again. I wish that I could be one of the people who got here and got on my knees and sang glory hallelujah and went on my way rejoicing, but that is not who I am. It is a struggle to bow down to an authority other than my own. I really think that I should be running the show. I really think God would do a better job a lot of the time if he would take guidance from me. I think that I'm, and I mean, this is crazy because I'm not psychic at all, but I think that I am the greatest psychoanalyst that ever lived. Like, I can look at you, and just because your socks don't match, I can tell you everything about you. And I'm absolutely sure I'm right. And the funny thing about it is, I'm usually dead wrong, but then I go ahead and operate as if I were right. And that then again puts me in a position where I have to start making amends, because I treat people based on what I think I know. And I believe that what I think I know is the truth. But all it is what I think. It's just what I think. And there's a line in there between asking God to direct my thinking, which mainly for me just means, I mean, I don't hear God's voice, but I am willing to follow directions. And for me, that is that kind of satisfies that. But I really can walk around. Jonathan called it the skull-sized castle. I call it the control tower. And I walk around, and I am operating autonomously from my control tower. And that leads into the other sentence that is not a thrill. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. I love theory. I swear there is not a book that anyone has ever mentioned in my AA career in a meeting that I have not gone out and bought and purchased and immediately read. And I don't mean I read the fly leaf. I read the whole book and I took notes and I highlighted and I discussed it a lot with anybody who was willing to talk to me about it. I love theory. It makes me feel really smart. And it also helps me avoid what's going on down in the dirt, which is what I think that the rest of the world is operating in when I'm up in my control tower. I don't want to be touched by the dirt, so I'm operating up here. The problem with that is that I can't have relationships like that. I can't grow like that. I can't grow towards who God made me to be. I can't grow towards God. I can't grow towards other people, because I'm up here in this tower. But theory is just delicious for my ego. I really can get going on conversations about that. But what is more powerful is when I stand in place and love somebody who is particularly unlovable in the moment. That is how spirituality becomes something that is alive and dynamic for me, is when I let go of looking at a situation and automatically determining whether it's good or bad, right or wrong, you know, pretty or ugly. When I let go of that and just show up, assume that I am where I am supposed to be because God put me there, and I'm willing to just stand. And sometimes it's just listening. I mean, I'd like to believe that people talk to me because they want to hear all the wonderful things that I have to say to them. But really, most of the time, it's just being called upon to listen. And that is an amendment, again, to my personal constitution. Because I really think it should be, you all listen to me, I do all the talking, and whatever you have to say is probably negligible anyway, so let's just stick with me. And again, no way to have relationships. no way to, you know, what is the Norman Vincent Peale thing? How to win friends and influence people. I can't tell you how many people have suggested that I read that book. And I've never read that book. Even though I've read every other book in the world, I'm not reading that. It's got a yellow cover. It's smiley, happy. That really irritates me. That's the kind of stuff I don't like. Dangerously antisocial. But how I come down out of the control tower and I don't let the spiritual life be a theory is that on one of the many long days of reconstruction, I answer the phone when somebody calls. I show up at a meeting when I'd rather stay at home. I learn to find something good in every conversation, in every relationship, in every meeting. Several months ago, somebody said to me, I went to a meeting with someone, and after the meeting, I said, well, I don't need to go back there anymore, which is my tricky way of saying that sucked. But I think that I'm slick, and by saying, well, I don't need to go there anymore, I think that I'm somehow not saying the ugly thing of, I'm not going back to that meeting because it was crap. And the person called me on it and said, you feel that way about every meeting you go to. Can you imagine? But somebody did. Someone said that back to me. And that was shocking, and it was a gift, because it made me start going to meetings and looking for what was right. That is another part of the long period of reconstruction ahead. That is another part of me resigning from the debating society, of me not being the critic or the judge of the world. Again, showing up, knowing that I do not know, with the assumption that God has me there for a reason, so I need to stay there until I figure out what the reason is. Thanks.
All right, we'll do the final paragraph, and you guys probably get another minute or two each. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
I think these promises are absolutely extravagant. And anyone who stands next to me when we say the prayer will probably hear me say, yup, whenever someone says, are these extravagant promises? And that's just a habit I got from my spine. It's not because I'm special or I think I know more about AA. It's more of an ironic joke for me. I'm just flabbergasted. The only thing I really have to say about this particular paragraph is that they are the ninth step promises, not the promises. And I don't receive these until I have, I can't tell you the specific number of amends you have to make, but you got to make some amends before you start receiving these in your life. And I can tell you that I absolutely have received these today. And one of those is being able, is God doing for me what I cannot do for myself? Because much like Amy, I cannot walk into a meeting without saying, none of you motherfuckers know what you're talking about. Y'all just need to stop sharing so it can be my turn to share. Because I know what AA is really all about. That is my basic state of operation when I walk in. And the only person that's ever been able to do anything for that is God. Because if you let me sit alone in the control tower, as she described it as, I will try to run your meeting. Because I also... I love how she could describe the entirety of my life in three words. I love theory. I was the guy that sat, I was the guy that at parochial school who read all of the wordy books about Christian theory and why Christianity was bad and would argue with the monks and continue to do that for the rest of my life with just about every topic. We could go ad infinitum on all the topics that I have read books on, and one of them was, funnily enough, not how to make friends or influence people, because I don't care about that. Don't give a crap about that. I already said MF earlier, so I don't even know why I'm bothering. That's cursing. But anyways, the 9-step promises. These happen after I complete the 9th step. I absolutely do believe that they are entirely extravagant and only capable from some dude, the great omnipotent dude, as I like to call him, because I'm super clever and I'm also lazy and I don't think I'm thinking of another name for the guy, who comes into my life as a result of just showing up and considering others. I think it's all I got. Thanks.
Probably the most powerful thing in these promises for me is, we are going to know a new freedom. I never wanted to be where I was. I was always looking over the person's shoulder that I was talking to for the next great thing to come along. I was sure that if I got another pair of black shoes, they would be the ones that proved that I was fashionable. Even now, I think if I could get rid of my dirty carpets and have hardwood floors, my life would be perfect. Not that I would invite anyone to come in my house. So I don't even know why I care. But anyway, and that's freedom. I was always the person that was very awkward and uncomfortable. It seemed like everyone else got a book on how to live and how to get along, and I didn't get it. You know, how to fall in love and be uncomfortable and hold hands. Me, have sex on the first date. Let's get the nervous stuff out of the way. Then we'll move in together. Then we'll spend a couple of years trying to figure out how to get the heck away from each other. You know, I didn't know how to be a child. And so I was the parent of the house. Both my parents were alcoholics. And I would set an alarm. And I would get up in the middle of the night and I would scurry around the house and put things to rights. You know, if a stereo was on, if the stove was on, so that when we woke up in the morning, things would appear to be normal. I really thought everyone else knew what they were doing, except for me. I was always pretending. And the new freedom that I have today is, I'm not pretending. And it's not always the most attractive picture that I have to present to the world, but it is who I am. And I believe that I am unfolding into who God made me to be, although I have no idea what that is. I know more about what that is not. And that's freedom too. Thanks.
Thank you. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting and paying outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements for the good of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight? Anybody? Announcements. Our group, the Simple Actions Group, where we're all sitting right now, we're having an event on April 30th, and there's some beautiful spring-like yellow flyers up here on this table. We would love it if you would grab a small stack and take them back to your groups and help us get the word out. April 30th, food will be at 6 o'clock. It's potluck, so we'll eat what you bring, and then we'll have a speaker at 7 o'clock. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hand. Newcomers, you are the reason we are here. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like to welcome you if you would let us know who you are.
Hi, my name is Alina and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Alina.
Hi, Alina. Welcome.
Welcome. Josh, an alcoholic.
Josh. Hi, Josh. Welcome.
Hey, I'm Isaac.
Hey, Isaac. Hi, Isaac.
Welcome. Welcome.
Robert.
Hi, Robert.
Robert. Robert.
Welcome. Welcome.
Hey, Dylan.
Hey, Dylan.
Welcome. Welcome.
Hi, Joel. Welcome.
Welcome. Welcome. All right. There is literature available on the table over here. Just see a home group member if you'd like to purchase a book. All the paper material up there, if you can fold it, it's free. There's lots of good information up there on the table. Please feel free to help yourself. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. May we please thank the panel one more time. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol on 22nd and Colonial. Can't wait to go there. And may I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164, nice and loud.
David Yule, an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
You.
Abandon yourself to God and understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we will surely meet some of us, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. We have a great way to close.
How do you know? This all comes already in the time.
Walk you out, man.
Come on, let's drink.
But deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.